Chapter 1, Spring 1959, Florence, Italy. I was living at the time in a penthouse overlooking the domes and towers of this medieval Tuscan city. From the patio, I could look down on Dante's slow-moving Arno River. My daughter Susan, now 12, and my son Jack, now 10, were with me, attending the American school just east of the old bridge. I was almost broke, and employment prospects were dicey. Until the preceding year, I had been a successful psychologist, author of many scientific papers, and two well-regarded books on the diagnosis of personality. After 16 years of research and teaching, I had quit my post as director of psychological research because I felt confused about my profession. For 10 years, my research teams had been keeping score on the success rate of psychotherapy. And oh dear, we found that no matter what kind of psychiatric treatment was used, the same discouraging results occurred. One-third of the patients got better, one-third stayed the same, one-third got worse. Control groups receiving no treatment showed the same scores. For all its efforts, psychology still had not developed a way of significantly changing human behavior. I'd found myself practicing a profession that did not seem to work. So for the last year, I'd been in self-imposed European exile, living on a small research grant and cashed in insurance policies, reading philosophy, and thinking. I just could not accept the apparent fact that we human beings, even we university-educated humans, could not solve the problems of human nature, namely unhappiness, stupidity, and conflict. I just finished typing a manuscript called, quote, The Existential Transaction. I did it on an old-fashioned rented Olivetti. This book suggested new, interactional, humanistic methods for changing behavior. For the first time since my 35th birthday, I was feeling some flickers of enthusiasm. I thought I knew how human beings could direct their own personal evolution. The next step was to find a clinic or university where I could put these ideas to the test. The penthouse bell rang, and there, shaggy, tweedy, his Celtic eyes twinkling with intelligence and rebellion, was Frank Barron, my old pal and drinking companion from graduate school at Berkeley. Since then, Frank had earned a reputation as one of the world's leading authorities on the psychology of creativity. In the course of his studies, Frank had become passionate in his belief that only psychology, by effecting a fundamental reprogramming of the human mind, could prevent a nuclear holocaust. Barron, passing through Europe on sabbatical, was burning to tell me about some unusual experiments he'd performed recently. He said his research on creativity had led him to Mexico, where he interviewed a psychiatrist who'd been producing visions and trances using the so-called magic mushrooms. So Frank had taken a bag filled with the mushrooms back to Berkeley and ingested them. Okay, at this point, Frank lost me with all this talk about William Blake revelations, mystical insights, and transcendental perspectives produced by the strange mushrooms. To tell you the truth, I was a bit worried about my old friend, and I warned him against the possibility of losing his scientific credibility if he babbled this way among our colleagues. Frank left two very practical gifts of friendship. He offered me $500 from his Ford Foundation research grant to go to London and interview Arthur Koestler on creativity. We'll hear more about that later. Then he told me that the director of the Harvard Center for Personality Research, one Professor David McClellan, was taking his sabbatical leave in Florence. He might help me get a job. It turned out that Professor McClellan had read my book, The Interpersonal Diagnosis of Personality, and was eager to talk shop. He invited me for lunch the next day. The professor was a lanky, Lincoln-esque man of about 45, married to Mary, a petite, dynamic Quaker. They bubbled with New England academic charm. McClellan and I sat on a patio with a view of the fabled city, the hometown of Dante Alighieri, my hero. We were drinking pale Chianti and discussing the future of psychology. McClellan seriously examined the title page of my manuscript. He wanted to know what this book was all about. I explained that by existential, I meant that the psychologist should work with people in real life situations, like a naturalist in the field, observing behavior in the trenches. We should treat people as they actually are and not impose the medical model or the experimental model or any other model upon them. McClellan motioned for me to go on. By transactional, I said, I mean the psychologists should not remain detached from their subjects. Hey, they should get involved, engage the events they're studying. They should enter each experiment prepared to change as much or more than the subjects being studied. Oh my, McClellan raised an eyebrow at that. You mean you're saying that the scientist should change himself? He picked up my manuscript and flipped through the pages with serious concentration. I poured more wine and wondered whether I'd ever again be able to make a living in psychology. McClellan took off his glasses and looked still more solemn. What you are suggesting in this book is a drastic change in the role of the scientist, teacher, and therapist. Instead of processing subjects and students and patients by uniform and recognized standards, we should take an egalitarian or an information exchange approach? Is that what you're saying? Yeah, I said, that's what I had in mind. And, said McClellan, I gather you're hoping some unsuspecting educational organization will hire you to set up activist research projects, which will require the institution to change itself. That's about it, I admitted. I figured it was about time to collect my manuscript and pedal Susan's bicycle back down the hill. McClellan poured us both some more wine. He lit another stogie. Okay, Timothy, I'm prepared to offer you a job at Harvard. Are you serious? I'm intrigued, said Professor McClellan. There's no question that what you're advocating is going to be the future of American psychology. You're not a lone voice. There are several hotshots in our profession, like Benjamin Spock, Carl Rogers, Abraham Maslow, Harry Stack Sullivan, Milton Gloaming, all urging that we emphasize inner potential and personal growth through self-reliance so that patients can avoid dependence on authoritarian doctors and dogmas. You're spelling out frontline how-to-do tactics. You're just what we need to shake things up at Harvard. Poor McClellan, if he only knew.